power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, I want to play this game so bad. One. Deadline.
It is episode 30.
That's a three and a zero. That means we've done this.
Sometimes
that is about 30.
Of Diplomacy Cast, which is a podcast that we make sometimes, and it's about the board game Diplomacy. My name's Eric Mead.
And I am still Nathan Barnes.
All this time later, 30 episodes later, he's still Nathan Barnes.
Yeah, I haven't changed.
It's all downhill from here. After 30.
No, it's not until we beat Jesus that everything's downhill. So we got two more episodes.
And coming up on the next episode, we're going to beat Jesus. No, wait. All right, let's talk about this episode.
Wait, okay, let's just focus up. So this episode...
Yeah, is going to be a The Circuit giant recap. Because this world diplomacy thing happened like a month ago. We're just
not
now...
Not even a month? Okay, a month.
Yeah. By the time you hear this, a month ago, we're just now recovering from it. We've been asleep almost literally for the last month.
Well, that's because we took a stagecoach back from North Carolina. It was more of a circuitous route than I was. I think that was route is what I was
route,
saying.
Sure.
Yeah, it took a little while. We had to, you know, ford some rivers.
Yeah, imprisoned by Confederate soldiers briefly, as I recall.
Yeah. And at least one of our party died of malaria.
That's true. Yeah, which was sad. Rest in peace, Chris Martin. And
it's always the youngest guy.
Yeah, I know. It's always, and so that happened, and we're going to talk about it, and it was excellent. And so
we're going to do that, and we're going to have we're going to talk a little bit about one of the most exciting periodical pieces that has been out about diplomacy a little while.
Periodical pieces. Sure.
It was an article that came out based on someone's experience playing. They had a guy there.
And not just us were there. Also, a reporter was there.
We're going to talk about that article because it made a lot of waves, and it's super interesting.
Yeah. And then we are going to be joined by... Let's say the winner.
Yeah, we're gonna say the
WDC.
We're gonna put winner in quotes.
Yeah. Because actually, merely the second place finisher in this tournament. But he's the winner to us because
he came on the podcast.
Because he said yes. Coming on the podcast.
A lot of people don't know this. You have to win the tournament and then you have to say yes to Diplomacy Cast. That's the certification of you winning WDC.
But it's really like we're winning because he's Dan Lester and we have won by getting him to come on our podcast.
Which was Herculean at best.
Yeah.
We
had to move mountains to get the second place guy to come on our show. Yeah. We're moving up in the world. See, this is it. It's all downhill from there.
Yeah. Everything's coming up Millhouse.
Yeah. All right. So, the circuit right after this. If you have any, you know, questions, feedback, any of that stuff, we are diplomacycast@gmail.com. We are facebook.com/diplomacycast.
We don't have a Twitter or an Instagram.
Nah.
But we're thinking about it.
Although I learned to tweet at WDC, maybe we'll cover some of the excellent hashtags that we created.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Man. Hello 2003.
Hello 2003. And subscribe to us on iTunes. That was the other thing.
Yep. Okay. Thanks.
So we're gonna try and include a bunch of strategic discussion along with our tournament recap so that it's not just a road diary, although there will be some road diary to this part.
Sure.
But what we're hoping to do is make you feel happy if you attended the tournament and make you feel sad if you didn't attend the tournament because it was a spectacular tournament.
It was really good.
It was, first of all, it was enormous.
Yeah.
It was... pushing 100 people.
It was right up there.
Best turnout for WDC in a while in the U.S.
Hat tip to David Hood for really getting it out there.
You guys, anyone who's not ever been to a DixieCon, DixieCon's always fun. This DixieCon was, he really really pulled out all of the stops.
I mean, not only, and we talked about this already, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but, like, you know, the setting's great. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're sleeping in a dorm room, but it's right there. It's cheap. It's easy. You go downstairs. You play.
I liked the dorm. I don't know why.
Some people don't. Yeah. And not only did he have, like, the game room where you normally are, but he had, you know, these 6 floors of, like, essentially private suites where you got, like, 6 boards got to play. And I think I got to play in one of those once. It was fantastic. It was great. It felt like you were playing a house game within a tournament. I thought I had a really good feel to it.
Yeah.
But to start things off, I just want to say I really enjoyed the I'm not going to say awkward, but
It was super awkward.
But awkward.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way. So Mr. Hood, through a relation, through a family friend, had got Miss North Carolina.
No. Not through a relation. David Hood, unless somebody lied to me about this, which is possible.
Which is possible. It is diplomacy.
David Hood sits on the, like, judging committee that selects Miss North Carolina every year.
That would not surprise me at all.
At all, right? He appeared wearing a seersucker suit to welcome us all to the tournament. He gave us a brief history of North Carolina with, like, no irony whatsoever. God bless him.
Mr. Hood, I do hope you'll tell us if we're wrong about you not sitting on this selection.
Diplomacy people lie all the time, and I do understand that, but that's what somebody told me, is that you actually, like, are somehow in the process of the Miss North Carolina selection. He kept saying Mrs. North Carolina, but I think that's just because she was married
and her husband was there.
Vaguely grumpy husband was there.
It was so good, guys. It was so good.
We're making this story too long, but the point was just to give us a little welcome in Southern hospitality. Miss North Carolina came and called out the boards.
Yeah,
in the first round.
You know, in that way that someone just has to read a list of names that they've never seen before would read a list of names.
Yeah, but you know, with a smile on her face
and a tiara on her head and a sash across her. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note this was her last act as Miss North Carolina. This is the last thing. The crown was leaving.
You
got to
go
weekend.
Out on top.
This is the literally the crowning achievement.
Yeah,
it was so good.
Yeah, yeah, and it was met with, like, a lot of people being like, "Wow, I really didn't expect this. This is kind of, it was kind of awesome." Actually, she was like, "I mean,
she was great. She was
definitely
very pleasant.
A touch of class on an otherwise totally, you know, diplomacy tournament like experience." David Hood made us feel very welcome and very a lot of people had traveled a long way to be there. There was a ton of Europeans, a ton of Australians, a ton of this probably none of them might have thought to go to North Carolina had there not been a diplomacy tournament there. It's not like a top European tour destination.
For some reason, although I don't know why,
it is beautiful. It is actually pretty cool there, and it's like a fun little college town. Nathan's making a face, but whatever.
It's hot.
It is hot. It was really hot. He really pulled out all the stops to just be like, "Well, now that you're in North Carolina, this is how we roll. This is me in my seersucker suit telling you about it." And so anyway,
it was great. Many awkward people.
Yeah.
There
was a photo taking opportunity that a few people cashed in on to get, like, the selfie of themselves and the beauty queen.
Much to the chagrin of her husband.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think it was, the only shot I have of it is I took a picture of Toby Harris and Dan Lester just with their English accents getting right in there being like, "Oh, hello. You're Miss North." And they, like, really ramped it up. They literally played up their own accents for this. It was amazing. It was so funny.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was good. So that's just to paint you a picture if you weren't there.
Yeah,
this is how things start.
Yeah.
And she reads these boards, and people go off into their boards and whatnot. And Eric,
I hit rock bottom early. That was actually sort of my takeaway from the night was it's good to hit rock bottom on Friday night, and because then, you know, just get that out of the way.
Oh, yeah, get it out of the way. Or check.
Yeah, exactly. Or hashtag drop round, as Jim O'Kelly started during the tournament.
Hashtag drop tournament for him.
Yeah, totally.
It was not, yeah.
Bless his heart. But the point being, there was we do want to spend some time talking about the actual, like, boards that we experienced and witnessed and saw and that kind of thing, because, you know, that's fun, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, my Friday night, well, so the summary of it is I got stabbed by somebody who had learned to play the game earlier that day, and she pretty much killed us both, and I drank a fortified energy drink.
I think they call
Four Loko.
Those Four Lokos.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. So that was rock bottom right there. I just realized as I was drinking a Four Loko and being killed by someone who had learned the game earlier that day that I'd gotten rock bottom out of the way. It was sort of a strange... I was Austria. It was kind of a strange sequence. I had a good ally in Russia, and my other ally who had learned to play the game earlier that day was... Or was my ally Turkey? Darn it! We can't wait so long before we make these shows.
Yep.
I remember the guy. I just don't remember what country he was. But she was working. Basically, she was just doing her own thing. Is what was happening. She started things with, well, I think I should probably just go west then. Like, I didn't even have to suggest it, and I was like, yes, that's exactly what you should do.
Sure.
And so she went and did that for a while, and me and my ally did well in the Balkans, so goes my memory. And then, oh yeah, my ally was Russia, because I remember there being a desperate Turk in the Ionian Sea. And that's all, basically. Like, we basically crushed him. There came a moment when I thought that I had a pretty awesome opportunity to just, you know, maybe cut the umbilical cord a little bit and send her on her way. So I was going to just walk into Venice, which had been my option for a very long time. I was just sitting in Trieste with nothing better to do pretty frequently in that game. I had the option to walk into Venice. I figured, perhaps wrongly, well, it turned out wrongly, that the Turk who could walk into Naples and it wasn't going to be covered no matter what would choose to do so and survive, as
you
that
fool.
Was his only chance of surviving. And so I figured, well, I'll get Venice. She'll lose Naples. She'll pretty much fall apart after that. She won't know what to do when she's attacked. That's kind of dots for me, this and that. Unfortunately, for some reason that I didn't quite understand, she had returned to Venice at the same time, not because she thought I was going to stab her. She was just not sure about what she should do with a piece and just decided to move it to Venice. And so that neutered my stab. And also the Turk didn't go to Naples. And so basically I zero dotted her. Now, here's the interesting part of the story. I mean, me zero dotting somebody, that's not interesting.
No, it happens all the time.
I do that all the time. But what's interesting about the story was, here's a little hot tip that I have developed just for the situation. If you're stabbing somebody who it's truly like the first game of diplomacy that they've ever played in their entire lives, and you stab them, as the orders are getting read, don't say like, sorry about that. Or something. Instead, just act like that was the plan and then deal with it later and just explain to them that no, I was going to Venice for this reason or that.
Oh, I was just protecting it. No, we were supposed to go there and bounce. That was perfect.
Didn't we talk about
that?
Exactly. All of those things are things that I could have said. Instead, I said, sorry about that. And as soon as I said, sorry about that, she turned into just a raging anti-Austria death machine that had one job in the entire world, and it was to attack the guy that had stabbed her.
To be clear, did you say that during adjudication? Like,
yes.
Before,
yes.
She had read her... Oh, I see.
During adjudication.
That's even worse.
Really bad.
Yeah.
Really shoddy. It didn't cross my mind, because to me, anyone would have realized that was a stab. But honestly, like... She didn't realize it was a stab probably until I said that. Like, I could see the expression on her face change from just like, oh, what's going on here, to, oh, something terrible has happened.
I have a reason to do things now.
And then it just turned into, like this futile war between us that had no relation to anything else that was going on the board. And what was going on the board was, you know, who was on this board was Eddie Bresson in the West. He was England.
Gee, I wonder how this happened.
Yeah, and so, of course, Eddie then got gigantic and was just like, Eric's attacking you. You have to go deal with this.
Blah, you blah, better blah, blah, deal blah. With
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. I had actually forgotten until just now that he was that England, and Eddie got a fairly good result out of this, and I got no result at all, and my position just slowly, painfully, in a Four Loko-soaked haze turned into just ground dot by dot by dot into nothingness, and it was just because I made that one mistake, so that's one of those hot tips there.
Yeah, it's one of those.
If you're going to stab somebody who might not know any better, and it doesn't go off, you actually can just play it off like something you were doing something else.
And corollary, good rule no matter what, no matter how experienced and how many games they have, at least try and keep your damn mouth shut. Yeah, during sorry
about that. Save your sorry about that for when you're playing
negotiation.
Like, well, or save it for when you're playing against Nathan Barnes or something. You know, like who knows exactly what the heck Trieste to Venice means under the circumstances.
Exactly.
And then
he was just going to immediately like say, okay, stop.
Yeah, and when you say sorry about that during adjudication, he's going to say F you anyway. Yeah. And
sure,
also fine. So that happened. That was probably the most interesting part about that night. We went out. I didn't get very much sleep.
Well, for my part, I got I thought I was doing, you know, the board was red. I drew Italy. I was excited about that. I was like, yes, I get to play some Italian stuff. And you know, really long story short, I did not do well. I survived with one, but,
one more than me.
Well, yes, it was one more than you. And it was simply, I misread a like 1901, 1902 and the rest of the board was not willing to, pile on to Austria like I was. And it ended up being to everyone else's detriment, which, you know, a lot of things that you do on the board when you think that other people, I mean, here's the hot tip. Here's the strategic tip. Don't hesitate to explain to other players on the board your vision of what should be happening. Not in a condescending way, but in a, I'm doing this. This means you should do this because why it's good for you. And I think it's easy, especially for people that have played a lot of games, to really get in this mindset that things are obvious.
Yeah.
And you know, things are only obvious to you. And I think that's the lesson. Like, they're only obvious to you. They may be obvious to other people, but you don't know it until you verify.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was no reason for me to do poorly in that game other than for me not to really go out of my way, to really rely on other people to fill in the blanks that I should have filled in for them.
Yeah.
So
you almost can't spend too much time just saying, I'm doing this and this is why. It's a trust builder.
Yeah.
For one thing, there's a huge, I mean, not to go off on too much of a tangent,
no,
but
no,
there's a huge value to telling somebody the truth, like telling somebody what you're going to do, and it being the truth, and you having the ability to convince them in advance that it's the truth. Like, I mean, I probably said this on the show before, but like everybody thinks that the thing about diplomacy is to get somebody to believe something's the truth when you're actually lying to them. That's really not the biggest thing. The biggest thing is getting somebody to believe you're telling the truth when you're telling the truth, because people are so nervous and so edgy and so paranoid and they don't know who to believe, that the more time you can spend on like, I don't know exactly what the situation was on your board.
Yeah, I don't even remember. It doesn't matter.
The more time you can spend just saying, this is my plan. This is why this is my plan. This is why you can believe that this is my plan, because any other plan would be kind of insane given the circumstances, the better. Don't take it for granted.
Yeah. Don't take it for granted, which is what I did in that first game. And, so anyway, not to linger on it because it doesn't matter. Like it's an Italian. It's what happens when Italy doesn't do well. It's the same old story. Like went 4-3-2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know if you don't get deadline. That momentum, deadline.
Yeah.
If you do not get that momentum with the Italian, you're almost guaranteed. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. I think the Italians are one of the most difficult countries to really do a late game sort of rebuild. It's really tough. So that was that, and then I think we went out and had a. It was pretty fun.
I remember Friday night. Yeah, Friday night was really fun. Yeah. The whole time. One thing that's really nice about this tournament, and I had remembered this before. I hadn't been in exactly a decade. I realized after I got there. So I had forgotten many things about it in a decade. But there actually is like a lot of restaurants and bars much closer than I even remembered them being. Yeah. I even remembered them being like a little bit of a schlep down to wherever.
But yeah, even the quote unquote schlep that some people complained about was like 10-minute walk.
Yeah. And
like, come on.
Yeah. Also, side note, large groups of college kids in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, they, like the rest of us in our nation of anywhere but North Carolina, they enjoy going out in mixed groups of men and women and partying at bars. Only the difference is they do so in full formal attire from time to time.
Yeah, why not? No reason whatsoever. Yeah,
it's Friday is right. What we're celebrating.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And so...
Also, I just want to put this as a side note, just so you know, that's not Chapel Hill, North Carolina. For reasons I don't understand, they only play music from the 90s.
Mm.
In a really...
Which, actually, there was a big payoff really for that on Sunday night.
Weird way.
Yeah. There, if you can find the right place, you'll just be in 90s music heaven, and you never need to leave. But
it was really weird.
It was strange. I don't know if 90s are retro now.
Or they just are still in the 90s.
That's actually
possible. Like, I walked by, I think it was Saturday night, maybe it was Friday night, I walked by a place that was playing live music.
Yeah.
And the music they were playing, they were a cover band, they were playing Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
Like, it was like really like what?
I guess maybe that stuff could have just gotten down there.
I guess he's like, oh, wow, this album from 15 years ago is amazing.
Hey, we live in Seattle. Maybe we're privileged.
I guess maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, so we had a great night out, nightlife. We plugged that enough about Dixie and round two.
Yeah.
Saturday
morning.
Let's do yours first. I have more to say about mine.
I was actually sitting down, like, I actually kind of remember the least about this board, even though it was by far my best result of the tournament. And by the way, scoring system at this thing, if you weren't there, was really throwback draw-based. Like, everything was size of draw, and you could vote yourself out of a draw. You didn't have to eliminate people, but it was, like, size of draw was by far the impactful thing, and I might say a little more about that later in terms of, or maybe we'll save it for Dan. So playing to a nice, cozy Care Berry three-way draw was actually a pretty decent strategy in a tournament. Like, if you couldn't solo, like, excuse me, if you wanted to just do well, like, even things like Best Countries were hand it, like, if you were a 15 center Russia, but it was a four way, you were losing Best Country to a 12 center Russia in a three way.
Yeah.
For example. So
it's funny. It's just the way the whole hobby worked 10 years ago. This is, I mean, it's not like it's not weird. It's
for the record, the exact same as DixieCon has done for 25 years. He's basically not changed it very much.
He changed it a little bit for this tournament, which I don't think it works so well, but but I mean, the core of it has not changed at all.
I made a joke about like the rule sheets probably like just being there since last year. They just like left it in a cabinet.
Exactly.
Like,
no, yeah, they just live here. No,
so
one touches
to
them.
Go to Ginkgo's or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. It's the same system. We don't change it. We don't put a date on it. It's the same thing.
So my Saturday round did end in a three-way that I was in. I basically just had a game-long alliance. I was England, and a French guy named Jean-Luc Clouet was France. So that seemed like it was destiny, especially because the German player and the Austrian player didn't seem particularly happy to be there or interested in playing or something. Like, I it was weird.
Maybe it was early.
That board happened fast because, like, the guys in the middle just kind of went squoosh pretty fast. And I don't remember who we drew with in the East. Somebody, probably Turkey, knowing how those games go. And unfortunately, other than working with Jan, which was which was the highlight of the game for me because he's a really good player, and he and I have had good games together and bad games together in the past, and not much stands out about that game for me. I remember a couple of times when I could... I remember wrestling with my own twitchiness in that game quite a bit. There were moments when I could have... two or three moments when I could have just trusted Jan completely, chose not to, and like cover some stuff, and it sort of slowed down our momentum because Jan was trustworthy every time. And but I also felt like I couldn't give him too much, or he might just... There was one moment in particular where if I hadn't made some moves that were not so good for our alliance, the following season he could have done me for three,
yeah,
or something like that. And it was one of those things where it slowed us down a bit. Like, we were like really getting over the line and everything was starting to go really well for us. And then I was just like, no, you could just take all of everything I've taken off of continental Germany right this next season if I don't just do it in a way that makes you a little bit unhappy. And to be fair, of course, Jan said, oh, that's too bad that you did it that way, because now we're going to get locked up over here and we're going to get locked up over there. And I said, yeah. And on the other hand, had I not done it that way, look what you could have done to me next season. No, I wouldn't have even.
No.
Why would I do that to you? And probably at the time he said it, he meant it, but also probably when he would have looked at the board, given the position he was asking me to be in, he would have just been like, oh,
I'm just going to go ahead and do that.
Yeah. So there was one of the two twitchy moments I had in that game. I didn't regret that one. There was another one later on that I did kind of regret that kind of ended the game, where I was just like, yeah, I'm twitchy again. He's like, okay, it's just three ways. And I was like, okay, it's three ways. Yeah.
As it should be. As it should be.
But the good news about that board is, as I recall, we were the first to end.
Congratulations.
And so had many, many hours to nap and chill and hang out and watch soccer in a bar. And yeah, so good. That part was good.
Yeah, well, mine was, I was in one of the suites for the second one, which was nice. It was interesting, very similar. I also played England, and I also was in a three-way. The difference was... I went for an unconventional three-way, and I think that the rest of the board wasn't... Because I just tapped into the... You know, I just went back 10 years. I'm like, how did I used to play this game? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This was your crazy, like, northern...
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it was like... You know, I just went back a couple of years. I was like, how did we used to do this? Oh, yeah. So it was like fall 01, spring 02 that I went to Russia and Germany, and I said... What do you guys think about a northern? And they're like, oh, all right, well, you could do a northern. Unfortunately, the rest of the board either didn't know what a northern was, or just really, I mean, didn't see, like, the coordinate, obviously, you know, we did not coordinate it in a, you know, lockstep sort of way. Went out of our way to create conflicts and bounces and
okay, so let me get this straight. The way that you used to play this game was to pick out by hand a dirty three-way alliance that you were going to be a part of from 1901, sell two guys on it, and then spend the rest of the game making that happen.
And not just making it happen, just sort of making that happen in a way where it was all faux fights and like...
That sounds fun.
Shadows kind of fun. And dagger, you know, just like cloak and dagger.
Yeah, luckily there aren't so many scoring systems that reward
No one does that anymore. But I was like, oh, yeah. So we just... On one hand, it was easily the most successful game I did all tournament. I think I topped the board. Maybe I was second. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like 9 or 10. And at no point was there any concern that I was going to get stabbed or something wasn't going to go right. Like, it was all about, like, how do we make this dramatic performance the most believable?
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually they figured it out, like, near the very end. And
you are dead, but you do not know it yet.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, we didn't, like, lord it over them or anything, but it was like, oh, yeah, no, this was the plan. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at once satisfying in that, like, the big reveal, but also not very satisfying because there wasn't a lot of, you know, there was no tension.
And there was a 0% chance anybody was soloing that board, too.
Oh, yeah, 0%. Yeah. 0%.
Yeah.
So we didn't want any of that. So that was my second round. It was like, oh, easy breezy, cover girl, boom.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and that is actually sort of a scoring system. I was laughing a little bit because he said, oh, yeah, this is how I used to play this game, because we all used to use scoring systems like that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
kind of how everybody used to
yeah,
play
the
game.
Yeah, we used to play it like this all the time.
Part of the reason that the scoring systems fell out of favor on the West Coast is that, like, new people would come to our tournaments and they'd just be like, well, you guys just decided in advance that the three of you were going to... And we'd be like, no, wait.
Well, it wasn't in advance of the game.
No, we kind of did, but we didn't. But it's
yeah. It's one of the reasons we moved away from it. It's not great play, and like I just described it, it's not that fun play. I mean, mm-hmm. You miss out on a lot of the
fun part of it. Is the part of it where everything that you do is furthering that secret goal.
Yeah,
that you do a little kabuki here and there it's not like your mind can't get changed. It's not like you're totally locked into something, but like you find, like, ideally when you're playing that game with that sort of policy, you have like four of those plans that you've worked out.
Yeah,
and you
course.
Get to pick the one you like the best as the game unfolds.
Yep.
Ideally you're like, it's you, me, and Dave to the very end, right? Yeah, no, yeah. We're doing the northern to the very end, and then you're like, yeah, but we're really doing the southern. No,
yeah, yeah.
We're doing the western.
We're doing the triple. You have like three of those things going on. And
then one of them turns out to be the real one, and the rest were sort of fakeries that you were doing all along. But the problem is, whichever one you decide is the real one at some point, it's probably because those people are doing well also, and then those games don't end in solos very
No. And that's one of the reasons we got rid of that. You know, that's one of the reasons we moved away from it.
And this is not a complaint about the DixieCon scoring system, because it's been the DixieCon scoring system for 25 years. But I will say there weren't very many solos at this tournament. And it's because people were sort of, whether they were conscious of it or not, they were sort of acting in their tournament interest. Yep. You know, they like, if you could go in there and get three ways, you were in the top seven probably.
Easily.
Right?
Easily.
Yeah. Especially as the tournament unfolded, you were finding out that there weren't many solos very many places, and there's also dirty two ways that happen every once in a while, which someone just concedes to your two way, which you should never do.
Don't
never,
do that. Please
listeners,
don't, do that.
Don't go to tournaments.
Please don't ever do that.
And vote yourself
only for the
out
two
of
way.
A two way.
The you, two ways you should never.
As a matter of fact, don't vote yourself out of solos either. You can vote yourself out of three ways, but don't just give up before somebody's taken the 18th dot. Make them prove it, and make them especially prove 17-17, right?
Oh, yeah, because that's impressive.
Even if they grind you down to two, what if they freak out on each other and have to call a draw anyway?
Yeah.
Hey, you get a ton of points for living through that. Yeah.
Yep.
And if somebody solos, you were losing anyway.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Moving on. So,
sudden rant. No, unexpected rant.
Unexpected rant. Third round. Let's see. Well, my third round, I'll just tell it really quick because it was not, it'll dovetail well with Eric's second round. Jan Kruse was the England to my Germany Germany. This doesn't happen very often. It was a game in which in fall 1901, I had a choice to do something, and that was to bounce or not bounce someone in Sweden.
Mm.
And talking to the entire board, it was apparent to me that whatever I did on this move, if I picked wrong, if it was the wrong one, and I don't know which one it is, if I pick the wrong one, I am going to be eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things that doesn't happen very often in spring and in fall of 1901, but I'm like, I could tell if I do this incorrectly, my game is over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and let you know I did it incorrectly.
Which was it?
I bounced. I should not have. Should not have bounced.
Yeah.
Because I knew the French were coming at me. I thought that Jan was with me. And then Jan just spent the rest of the game being Jan. Being like, oh, I'm so sorry, Jan. I did not mean Jan to fall into all your centers.
All right, if we're doing the Jan accent, then the next morning he came to me and he said, I think you and Nathan will have a different story on your podcast about the tournament with me. Yeah?
I had no problem. I think Jan really felt like he had... like somehow gotten one over on me, or like had like he was a terrible. It was like I had no ill feelings toward John. I was like, yes, you're just doing, yes, of course. It was that bounce in Sweden. And I was like, oh, and as soon as all the orders were read, I was like, and I'm going to be eliminated. That's what's going to happen. So like, he really felt like, oh, I'm doing all these things. I was like, no, you're just playing out what is clearly here. So anyway,
I mean, you shouldn't have to pay that much for a decision like that, but every once in a while, weird. Games are like that.
It was
like,
weird.
Yeah. There's not any amount of tactical advice that we could give on this show would prepare you for those moments when, like, it all comes down to, should I open to Burgundy or Picardy here with my army Paris?
And hundred something games I've played, it's so rare for a 1901 move to have that feeling before you write the order.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't think I've ever agonized over Denmark to Sweden for as long as it has. Yeah. Like, wow, this is wow. Which made it actually really fun. You know, it sucked that I picked the wrong one, but it was also like, holy crap, it's, you know, 30 minutes into this game, I'm already excited about it, and it's a thing, and we're really spending 8 minutes with four different people negotiating this.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
One side thought on that, if you're newer to tournament play, for those of you who are old tournament veterans, you already know this, but if you're newer to tournament play, if you go to a tournament and get your butt kicked on a board, and then you're sitting down with all the players afterwards and kind of trying to rehash, what mistakes did I make on this board? How come you went and attacked me back then? They will always tell you, well, if you hadn't bounced me out of Sweden in 1901, or they'll always have some ridiculous thing that if you'd have just done it differently, you guys would have been best friends on the Care Bear Meadow forever, and everything would have been fine. They're usually full of it.
Yes, like, usually.
I remember many such conversations where, like, the real answer was, well, I just didn't know you or trust you, and I thought you were maybe an idiot, and so I killed you or something like that. But they want to give you something, and so they're like, oh, well, if you'd have just opened to Armenia and the Black Sea and just attacked Russia right away, we totally would have worked together for the entire game. And
if you'd made moves that were totally detrimental to your position and totally advantageous towards me, that would have been perfect.
Yeah. So that thing that people tell you was like the turning point in your game versus what Nathan's talking about, where it, like, Nathan's played a few games and he actually did correctly identify the turning point in his game in fall 1901.
But it's never like that. Yeah, like, it's such a weird phenomenon. Yeah. It was a world deployment, you know, it was a WDC, all the players involved were very high caliber players.
Yeah.
You know, normally you just wouldn't feel that way, but, you know.
My Saturday night game, Dan Lester was on the board, and Dan Lester's going to be joining us soon, and I was going to relate the entire story of this game because I feel like it's actually kind of a legendary board, just in terms of, like, when we all sat down and saw who was what country and what the situation was and everything.
I was super jealous. I wanted to be on that board.
It was a filthy, crazy, dirty board, and it ended up being quite a tournament deciding board. And I think, what do you think? Should we just save it?
Yeah, let's save it.
Because that was Dan's big board.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Something good happened for Dan on that board. And it was what propelled him into the win at the tournament.
Yeah, the win. Ticket. That's the ticket.
So we're going to save my Saturday night round because I actually still have questions for Dan about and want to hear him tell the story.
That's better. Let's do it that way.
I hope Nathan's not bored to tears when Dan and I.
Oh no, it'll be great. I'll color it up and this will give you a chance to talk about your fourth round because I did not play the fourth round. I slept in.
My fourth round. So Jim O'Kelly said, oh, how'd your round go afterwards? And I said, oh, me and Ike Porter were best friends on our meadow. Jim enjoyed that. Ike Porter, very good player, was the Turk. I was the Russian. Actually, I don't want to be dismissive of that game because I actually felt like it was maybe the best I'd played all tournament. In fact, it may have been the best I played in a few tournaments. And even though the walkaway result from that was a four-way draw where I had about six or five or something like that.
You didn't feel like you belonged in it at all.
I
earned it.
Earned that, yeah, and sometimes these are your games, and sometimes that's like the takeaway. So the summary, I guess, to end at the beginning or whatever, I got eliminated on Friday night. I had a three-way draw on Saturday morning. I got eliminated on not eliminated, but I got soloed on Saturday night.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. There's no reason not to spoiler that. I got soloed on Saturday night, and then I was part of a four-way on Sunday. Of all of those, by far, the most sort of adrenaline-pumping game was my Sunday morning game. And yes, it sort of ended in a Careberry kind of way, but I was getting I was Russia. Ike was Turkey. England and Germany just plowed into me, just like there was never any moment when they were doing anything other than totally, totally attacking me. It was just Western triple, Western triple, Western triple, which, you know, like is, I think people listen to this show and they just do it to put me on tilt now. I'm pretty sure like, they're just like, oh, Eric's Russia or Austria. He hates it when we do this. Let's just do this. He'll just tank his own game because he's so mad about it. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of will. And I had, gosh, I don't even read. I can't exactly remember how I opened. Oh, I remember. It was like the worst way one could open for...
If there's a triple.
If there's a triple, which is I went straight to Romania and then Moscow to Sevastopol.
Wow.
And Warsaw to Galicia. Yeah, I think. Yeah, so I was just as jammed as far south as you could possibly be, and then
hey guys, don't mind me, I'll be over here.
Yeah, and then they just and then I actually tried to do the thing we always preach here, where you realize you're about to get bounced out of Sweden, so you move to the Baltic Sea.
Yeah, you should do
and,
that.
And Andy Bartoloni, a friend of the show, was Germany, and he actually knew I was gonna do that, and so he followed the move to Denmark, which I've never even seen before.
Oh yeah, you can do that.
Oh yeah, there's totally a counter to our counter play.
Should definitely, if you think the Baltic moves, then you do the whole thing.
Yeah, and so he just built three, and that was fine. So no problem there. So England was attacking me, Germany was attacking me, Austria was a bit of a loose cannon, and was sort of thought I was attacking him. Although all I was trying to do was sort of like march pieces back to where I needed them or like toward Germany, basically. Yeah. And Turkey was Ike Porter, and he was my best friend on that meadow, and he was sort of willing to do his own thing. And it actually, like, instead of joining in on the dog pile on Eric, because there was clearly enough people attacking me already, he didn't really need to. He could go do other interesting things like build fleets and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not that he and I were working together. He was just kind of like, everyone's killing him. I'll just go over here then. That's fine. And he played a very, very patient game, and then like did one of those things where he just got ginormous at the end, like turkeys do. So
This is the silent killer, the silent giant. Boom.
And I probably spent more time talking to him than anybody else, just talking him off me every season, just being like, "We're okay. It's okay. Everything's fine. You go over here. I'll help. Whatever." And then. So we just kind of, I just kind of spent all my time like kind of going in between like England, Germany, even France, just trying to get anybody to stab anybody, and it started working. Eventually, people started stabbing people. I can't even remember who stabbed whom, because like the Western triple just was like giant stab, like giant counter stab, and I felt like I had like some to do with that, because I remember like the first thing I decided to do was just like, well, I can't fight them all, I'm just gonna fight Germany and totally bone my position against everybody else, because I have to do something, and there's dots over there that I can actually get. So because I was in the Baltic, right? I was in the Baltic, and yeah, he was like pressuring Warsaw and this and that, but So I just did that for long enough. I was like, I'm borrowing the dots. I get that I'm not keeping them. Then he chased me out of them. But then I pulled back to my homeland and then managed to, like, fall into Austria for a little while and, like, got a couple of things down there working with Ike and just got them to, like, just sow just enough discontent. And I felt busier in that game than I've felt in years in a game where I was like, okay, cool, now I need to talk to you. Okay, now let's go, you know, just...
Come on. Move.
Yeah. And I lived, I eventually, it got a little weird at the end because, like, I sort of destroyed all invaders and, like, it got cold close to Moscow and they all turned around and went back.
Then
it was sort of in this situation where Ike had started to do really well and I was scattered all the hell over the place. I was, you know, I had a couple pieces at home. And or trying to recapture St. Petersburg or something like that.
Sure, yeah, you're littered between Budapest and St. Petersburg.
But then somehow, right, exactly. And then, I might have even been in, like, Tyrolia. And,
sure.
Like, I was spread all over the place. And then at some point, like, Ike and I had to have the conversation about, like, he was like, so are you the kind of ally where you'd just help me solo because I'd been a good ally all game and your position's kind of tanked? And I was like, I'm not really that ally.
You need to find a different guy.
Yeah, you're probably going to need to. And so I kind of turned around and was just, like, covering stuff against him because he could have done me for, like, 4 at one point. Like, he could have, like, completely just killed me. And so I just turned around a little bit. And then there was this other weird moment where I realized, uh-oh, Ike's having a bad turn and I could actually keep going at this point and I could have, like, started marching into Turkey, and then I decided I was a Care Bear and I didn't want to do that because he'd left me alive for a really long time when he didn't have to, and it just felt weird and, like, I didn't want to do it. And so it ended in a vaguely unsatisfying 4-way draw, but
you earned it.
It was
you
a earned great it. Game for me. It. Like it, and my whole point of, like, recapping my results in the tournament were, like, okay, I finished in, I don't know, probably 20th place, 25th place with those results. Like, nothing really to write home about. I didn't win best anything. I didn't do it. But, like, I left that tournament feeling so much better about my game than I did after WAC or, like, the last couple of tournaments that I've gone to, and I've just sort of, like, taken a dump, you know?
Just be like, nope.
So...
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, you know, just to kind of, like, so that was our tournament. It was great.
Yeah.
As we mentioned at the intro, there was a guy.
Yeah.
He was a reporter, and he was there the first round. So in this next segment, we're going to talk about, we're just going to recap that article really quick. We'll spend, you know, 15, 20 minutes talking about it, because there was a lot of buzz about it, and I thought it brought up a lot of interesting topics, so.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Right after this.
Hot off the press?
Yeah, there's people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot?
We just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
All right, cool.
All right, so this article came out, and it's on Grantland.
Grantland.com, if you haven't found it. It's actually... I got a little, like, fanboy when I realized that the reporter that had come to our tournament was from Grantland, because it's like, I read it all the time.
Yeah.
They write about sports, they write about pop culture, they're excellent. They're Bill Simmons, if you know him, it's like his brainchild. He's a sports columnist, sports guy on ESPN.
It was a really cool article.
Bill Simmons wasn't at our tournament, but his lackeys somehow came to our tournament. I don't even know how this happened.
David Hood magic.
Yeah,
that happened. And so there was a couple of key things, like the overarching thing that I took away from it that I thought got a lot of discussion on Facebook is, you know, everybody in the diplomacy community that's on Facebook kind of got up in. You know, there was, like, all these strings going on. It was more diplomacy talk than I've seen on Facebook in a long time. And really, the thing that came out of it was how the reporter portrayed the game.
Yeah.
And I think I'll just come out and say that I was a really big fan of how he approached it.
Yeah.
It was very real. He, I believe. Made the game very approachable, and it really brought the game to life, the experience of the game to life for people that have maybe never played it before. And I think the analogy, or sort of like the sort of what I hearkened it to was it seemed a lot like reality TV. That typing is Eric. He wants to bring it up.
Yeah, I want to be able to tell you the headline so you guys can find it. The headline was The Board Game of the Alpha Nerds. And it was like a full feature, like sort of, you know, like they do a few features a week. It's a really long, really detailed article. Right. And it was basically just this, the writer is,
David Hill.
Yeah. David Hill. Right. I went back and actually read some of his other stuff. He's excellent.
Yeah.
And he came and just sort of wanted to give the entire experience of like what it's like to go to a diplomacy tournament. Yeah. It was like almost like a lifestyle article or something. Yeah.
It was really good. It was really good in that, like, he pulled no punches. Mm-hmm. He really said, this is what it is like. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, we're preaching to the choir here. You know, you guys listening, you gals listening, you've played the game.
Yep.
It's the only reason you listen to this podcast.
Hopefully you've been to a tournament, but some of you haven't, probably.
If not, but you know about the game, and you are already linked in to, and you're already part of, you know, the collective
mm-hmm.
that understand this. But for all the people that are reading this article that have maybe never heard of diplomacy, or have heard of it but been turned off by various reasons, This article really put in a perspective and put it into detail, like why this could be fun to a certain type of person.
Yeah,
and I have really high hopes that we'll get some people that are like, I'm intrigued by this. This is great. This sounds really fun. Despite the fact that he does not, you know, the way that he portrays his experience, he's very real about it. He's like, this was intense. It was emotionally overwhelming. It was, these mm-hmm. guys were incredibly over the top.
Hated myself. I hated my ally.
I questioned
my other players. I questioned everything.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it was great. It was amazing. And that's really what I would like to talk about a little bit. Like, there were definitely some people out there that are like, this really made our hobby look brutal and Hobbesian, you know, nasty, yeah. brutal, nasty, brutish, and short.
Malthusian or yes, yeah, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, but to that, I can only say, like, yes, it did. And that's how it is. There wasn't any portrayal here that was incorrect or yep. wrong. And I don't know if there's anything that needs to be fixed about it. I think it was nice that, you know, don't sugarcoat it. This is right. what it's like.
Yeah, and he kind of just goes from the beginning to, I mean, I'm not going to recap the whole thing. You guys should read it.
Definitely read it, please.
Do a much better job, or I'll do a much worse job than he did. But he sort of leads into it by explaining a game that David Hood put him on Friday night, which was really cool. Like, he wasn't just there observing. He was like, well, I got to play this.
If
I'm going to be able to tell the story right, I got to play. And he wound up on a board with a lot of interesting personalities mm-hmm. on it. Friends of show Chris Martin, Andy Bartoloni, both on this board. Others that you wouldn't know if you're just a podcast listener, but that we know also on the board. And he found himself in this sort of like death alliance with a guy named Brian Ecton, who we all know, where like it was one of those alliances that was like one for you, two for me, one for you, two for me. And then he just yeah. started getting ground down and ground down and ground down. And then he just relating sort of the kind of intense emotional part of the game where everyone was kind of mad at him because he just wouldn't give up helping Brian Ecton. Oh, and Toby Harris also on this part.
Yeah.
That's right. Who hasn't been on the show, but anyway, So then he kind of from there, he goes to sort of more broadly telling the story of the history of the game, which is also a lot of really interesting stuff. He spent a lot of time talking to the Gandalf of our hobby, Eddie Bresson, and getting a much larger historical perspective going back to the postal hobby. And by the way, Eddie Bresson.
Oh, wow. There was an anecdote in there that I've known the guy a really long time now, and I thought I knew every Eddie Bresson story.
We shouldn't be surprised.
And there, this anecdote that Mr. Hill relates regarding his 17-year-old Eddie Bresson going and cutting up and editing a missive that he's gotten in the U.S. Post about about from some, you know, communication from some other player, and him like chopping it up and editing it such to say something else, and then sending it along like clearly just like. I don't want to say fraudulently, but just like it's forgery. It's like it's intense. It's hilarious. I was like, at the same time, the most mind blowing and overwhelmingly unsurprising thing I have ever read.
Even a tiny bit shocked, probably not.
I know, but at the same time, you're totally shocked.
Yeah,
it was. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, that anecdote.
And then there was another anecdote of a time that Eddie was playing on an online game, and then ended up calling the guy at home because he couldn't talk him into it over a keyboard, and so he was just like, "Oh no, I'll just like dial 411 and call the guy."
Right. So, I'd heard that story. I knew that story.
Man's a legend. Wow. What are we gonna do?
Wow.
Yeah.
But you know the.
But anyway, to your larger point, the way that we come off.
The way that we come off, but I want to just say a little bit about the hook of the game.
Yeah.
This is a guy that had never played before.
Yeah.
That had no vested interest in the tournament, no vested interest in the game, no vested interest in continuing the hobby, no vested interest in any of it. But found himself just embroiled in something that was emotionally just wrenching.
And look, and I feel like he understood to an extent this was our world championship.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that, like, everybody kind of brings it.
Yeah.
To that event and tries... is willing to get pretty real on a board in order to try and win it, and he sort of, I felt like he made the necessary caveats. Look, it's not always like this.
Enough people
told him about the idea of a house game or like a small tournament where people are like play a lot more friendly and like emotions don't get that raw. But man, it really did sort of bring to the forefront. Emotions do get pretty raw at these things, and those of us who are like, you know, grizzled old veterans, like we're sort of used to that. Like we're just like, oh yeah, someone's probably gonna cry, and somebody's probably gonna like yell, and somebody's gonna and we'll all have a beer and laugh about it afterwards. So goes something, you know, that apparently was a refrain that a lot of people said to him that he interviewed during this tournament. Yeah, we all go and have a beer. And he was like, but do you really?
Most of us really do.
Yeah, we really do. He wasn't sure he believed us based on his writing. Like, are you sure you're not like just totally like
sociopaths?
Yeah, right, exactly. And so it was interesting. There was, I felt like there was a dark side to it. And look, I mean, you know, like, he's a journalist. He was writing something edgy. He probably wanted to emphasize a little bit of like, wow, these guys are pretty intense. And part of that was cool. I know you told me, but like when we talked about it before, like you kind of liked that. Like we seemed like kind of a different kind of gamer, which we are. And that's kind of okay. Like, you know, not everybody who plays this game plays other games because other games are boring. And Diplomacy is not boring because of the human stuff and because, like, the interaction happens and can happen in a hurtful way. And
you can go from, you know, you can sit down to a game of Settlers of Catan and, like, go from beginning to end and, like, be just as invested in the game as you started out as you did at the end.
Right.
This is a guy that had nothing to do with this game and was so completely taken over by everything that happens in this game. That's how intense it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, obviously, as you noted, it's a little more intense than it usually would be. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think, to the outsider reading it, there is something that resonates when a person who's not involved at all suddenly is like trying to like wrestle with his own like, oh, what do I do? What kind of person am I?
Right.
And that is this game, and that's that kernel that really came through that I was so excited about.
So yeah, okay. So Nathan was excited about it. Some other people in the hobby were a little squeamish about
it.
Sure, there were people that were just like, "Ooh, wow, we seem like a bunch of like rabid buttholes that are just, you know, like how." Which is a fair question. Like, how is it that we're, like, willing to get ourselves this riled up to just get, like, a little wooden blot go from here over to here.
Right. Do we want to be associated? Do we want to be in the group? If you're reading this article, are you a person that's like, yes, I'm part of that group. I want to be one of those people, which was an issue that came up a couple of times. Like, yes. Are you proud of that?
Right.
And I don't know if proud's the right word. But I am.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And the answer may be somewhere in between. Dave Maletsky was also interviewed in the article, and had some to say about how he worries about player retention. In that circumstance, and he worries. I think the phrase was the toxic elements of the hobby or something like that. He worries about like people just treating each other crappy in the realm of a diplomacy tournament, and I've actually sat and had long debates with Dave Maletsky about this very subject, because he's very clear on exactly what he thinks about like how we need to behave at tournaments to make sure that we're appropriately welcoming and appropriately like encouraging of newer players and that sort of thing, and they're not just, you know, meat or whatever, because we don't want that. For me, it's a little bit of a tangent, but I feel like it sort of ties into the whole article. Like, for me, the game's not for everyone. And the article addresses that point, too. Chris Martin says it's not for everyone. Like, we lose a lot of people the first time they play. They just don't like it. They don't like the trust elements of it, and they don't like those sorts of components of it.
Or just the intensity.
Or the fact that sometimes you get stabbed or have to stab somebody, and they just don't like that part of it. And that's, you know, that's actually fine. But I've said, like, I feel like Dave, of course Dave, is like a little idealistic, and that Dave would probably say, like, no, this game should be for everybody. And I think the game's not for everybody, and that's okay. And you probably even go a step further than I do.
Probably.
And say, the game's not for everybody, and that's cool.
Well, yeah, right? It is a little bit cool. Like, look at the title of the article.
Yeah, the Alpha Nerd.
The Alpha Nerd.
Mm.
It's fair. When you get to the word for, that's problematic. Because the game isn't designed to be for. And when we say, you know, in the context that we're talking about right now, we're talking about tournament diplomacy, where people are pretty into it.
Yeah.
That level of play, you're not, it is just not something that is going to be appealing, attractive, or enjoyable.
Yeah.
And for most people.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, because
or
if it was
most or some or wherever you want to go ahead. Sorry, I didn't.
Yeah,
mean
no,
that,
it's but, fine. Like, I don't know where the sweet spot is, but I don't think that you need to change the behavior of the people involved, because honestly, that milieu, that mix of different personalities of humanity, getting shaken up and put on a board, and really you're confronting it in a way that you. Never in a raw way that you don't in actual life.
Yeah, and I know that there have been tournaments that like my happy early memories of tournaments were meeting some of these big personalities that other people talked about, these sort of like legendary people, like the article like does a great sort of Andy Bartoloni summary that kind of makes him come off as just like, whoa, that's an intense dude right there, because he was on that board and like, you know, like getting to play with Andy Bartoloni when I was new to tournaments, and like getting to play with Eddie Bersong, getting to play with Chris Martin, like all these people that you hear about and other people talk about, and they're these sort of like legendary, bigger than life personalities, and then you actually play with them and they kick your ass and you say afterwards, God, how did they do that? And you sort of sit and contemplate it, and then some people at that point are just like, oh well, they're just good at this and I'm bad at this, I'm done. Whereas other idiots like me are just like, ooh, I want to learn to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe not exactly that, but I want to learn like how to have my own thing that like kicks other people's asses.
Sure.
Well,
there was like and I can't believe I'm going to make a sports reference.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, this is a big moment. Yeah.
There are, my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
There are certain tournaments of sports ball.
In which
they're open to everybody. You don't need to qualify. They're like open cups or whatever. And you can get minor league teams playing major league teams. And the minor league teams, by and large, are going to lose.
Right.
But not
always.
Not always. That's for the audience. That's mm-hmm. for the spectators. Not always. Mm-hmm. But for the players, you get to play against really good players.
Yeah.
And you get your ass kicked, but you learn so much by it. And you're sure. I want to be there, and there's just no way to do it.
Sure.
Unless you go up against them and you're competing and you're learning. There's just mm-hmm. and that's what the players get out of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, the glory if they beat them, but also the like, yeah, I might lose, but holy crap, I get to play with these guys. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, so that's that part of it. I you said the word sweet spot or the phrase sweet spot earlier.
Sure.
And I feel like just if I'm going to have my own, since I don't have Facebook and y'all have been talking about it on Facebook, if I'm just going to have my own like weigh in on the subject, I feel like there is sort of a sweet spot in between. Like, we don't have to stop being, I don't know if elite is the right word, or elitist, or sort of somewhat exclusionary, because I think that, and again, Dave Maletsky is going to disagree with me here, I think, and, you know, there's probably other people that'll disagree with me here. I think that we don't have to bend over backwards to make people that probably would just never like this game and never be good at this game like this game and be
yes.
good at this game. We don't need to break our backs to do that. The people that come and stay are the people that were going to like it anyway. Sorry about the cat, everybody. Sorry. It's a new, yet another new cat in our world of cats and diplomacy.
That we actually only record in like cat houses.
Yeah, we try and have a special cat guest every yeah. time. This one's a new one. So my point is I feel like there's we don't have to break our back to include absolutely everybody, because there's people that aren't going to like it, and there's people that aren't going to be good at it, and that's okay.
That's super
fine. That really is super fine. And in fact, what's exciting is seeing somebody who's like not good at it, but wants to be, and then gets good at it.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome to see.
Usually they actually are sort of developing as human beings while that's happening. I'm not going to be so presumptuous as to say because of the game, but sometimes it's a little bit
because of the game.
Right. Like, they go and they learn to be less shy, and they learn to be like more, like, learn to be able to like say what they want, and they learn to, you know, and we always joke about like, wow, you learn to play this game and like work gets easy.
Oh yeah,
you
work's
know?
Awesome.
Yeah, work is like so stupid easy, because like there's people who don't know how to just sort of do the stuff, and not like the sneaky stuff necessarily, just the like the empathy and the communication and the reading other human beings and the like stopping and thinking about other human beings' motives and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff, all that, like, put it all in a big bucket and just say, like, if you want this bucket of stuff, great, like, welcome, come on in. Spend as much time asking questions, and we should be giving answers to those questions. And the flip side of that being, we should be doing that, darn it. If
yes.
somebody with the legitimate interest comes and they don't feel like they can, like, crack it, you know, they don't feel like they can get in, that's when we're doing something wrong. That's when we're being toxic, and that's when we're, like, being uninviting, and that's when we're hurting our hobby, is if there's somebody who's, like, legitimately has it in their nature or wants to have it in their nature to like this game and be interested in this game, because it's such a human, it's such a unique human experience. Like, we should always sort of identify that and spend the time to learn if that's what the person is.
Sure. And so, you know, you're talking about a tough prospect of trying to identify that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, you know, that
hey, we should
it.
Be good at that though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
We should be good at that. And yeah, I mean, I totally echo your sentiment on that. I think it's absolutely true. And I didn't get the sense from the article that the guy was never going to play the game again.
No, me either.
Which was actually interesting. I really thought that it was going to end with a sort of like, and I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
Sort of like, I took a cruise, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
But no, that wasn't what he left with. I feel like he left with sort of an cautious but somewhat intrigued feeling.
I hope
readers also.
There could be sort of like alpha nerds that pick up that article and they're like, finally.
Finally,
this
here it is.
One.
Boom.
Like, so tired of Settlers of Catan. I can't make it like do everything I wanted to do.
We just knocked that game.
Well, he mentioned it specifically. Yeah. Like my favorite line in the whole article was what he was like, Settlers of Catan, eat your damn heart out. I was like, yay, okay. I mean, it was the cheap one-liner, but it was good. That was solid right there. Like, because he just spent this whole time building up like how miserable he was at that moment. Like how everybody was mad at each other, and then he was just like, yeah. This is not your normal average board game.
This is not going over to somebody's house, having some chips and having some beer, and like, this is a thing,
right?
And anyway,
and so in as much as that, and especially because it appeared on a sports heavy website where
trended as like their number one article for a while.
It did, yeah. A lot of people read it. Welcome new listeners, if anyone is suddenly, I don't know if you are or not, but welcome new listeners if you are, and come to our tournaments.
Yeah, sure. You should.
It's fun. We will, I don't know, anything else you want to say?
No, I think I really got everything. I mostly, if nothing else, I'm more trying to spark a conversation.
Yeah. I guess one other thing I'd say about it is... if you've got a person or two or three or four in your life that are like, what's this diplomacy thing that you're into? Not a bad link to send them.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be there forever, probably.
Sure.
Just say, so this is what I do in my spare time, if anyone ever asks, and they'll be like, really?
But
if you have somebody that you think is considering learning the game, maybe start there.
Yeah, or, you know, if you're trying to put together a house game. I know there's a lot of people that, you know, write or talk to us and they say, how do we do this? That is a great in.
Yeah.
This is the game. What we're going to do is way less intense than this, but this is how it could be.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It is. It is really exciting. And if you were doubting at all just how exciting it was, I would try to describe to you the look on Dan Lester's face when he realized that he had taken 18 dots. It was some kind of creepy, polite British ecstasy. Like it was like a moment... at which I thought was maybe a private moment that a British man would experience that he wouldn't want to show to other people around him. But he was very happy in that moment. And I could tell that food tasted better to Dan Lester and air smelled better. And people that he generally disliked were people that he was happy to see for about an hour after that because he soloed that game. Because Dan Lester is, in fact, an alpha nerd.
Alpha.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to interview him right about now.
Right now. 1, 2, 3, go!
Joining us now on Diplomacy Cast, no less a man than Dan Lester,
finally,
we are called. Yeah, finally, we've only wanted him on the show for a couple of years. Joining us from London, England, he came to WDC. He, much like Miss North Carolina, who was not able to, if she's not able to serve her duties, there is a backup to her.
Right.
I understand, you know, like the second place in a duty contest.
Yeah, if there's an occasion in which someone needs to fill in or something happens to the winner,
she has to step down for any reason.
The tiara is passed.
So the tiara of the winner of this has been passed to Dan Lester.
Right. Congratulations, Dan.
And thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. It's just a pleasure to be standing in for the champion in such an august set of circumstances. I can't speak highly enough of the office, genuinely. Well, you get a stash. You get to wear a nice dress. It's nice to get out there. But I want to thank you for taking time out of your day or night or whatever it is you do in London. And, sitting down talking to us a little bit about your experience in WGC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
And by the way, after also winning DipCon, which was WAC, so you could also be joining us about your big win at WAC, which would be annoying.
Yes, let's talk about that. That's a good idea. Let's go with that one. Yeah. That was a great tournament. I had a wonderful time, and the best man won. Yeah, at WAC.
WAC. Let's go back there. So you hadn't been to Chapel Hill before, right?
No. Seriously? Like, why would anybody go to Chapel Hill?
I don't know.
Yes.
David Hood is there, and he's probably listening to this. So
no, he would agree with that. I mean, he's not like he'd concur.
He doesn't live in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You go to university there, or you perhaps would go there to pay homage to the home of Avalon Hill. Is that right? The games company. Are they from Chapel Hill, I think? Richard,
maybe.
Yeah. But apart from, you know, that.
Learning already. There we go.
That's the whole thing. So, have you been to the American South before?
Okay, it was hot, right? It was really hot. Really, yep. Really hot. And I was quite surprised because on the map, it's not that far down. Like when you look at a map of the United States and you think Florida, very, very hot. Like Washington, D.C., Baltimore, that's kind of in the north. It snows in winter. We have a relationship, you know, in Britain with that sort of temperate weather. And you go down a little bit and you think Carolina, okay, it's going to be hot-ish maybe. And then you get off the plane and you go, oh, crap, I brought my jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, so didn't you get like sunstroke or sun exhaustion or something?
I was going to lead into that slowly, but you just go right for it. Yeah, so yeah.
I'm going. No, this is not how this works.
So I had a little bit of touch of the old heat stroke just before round one, which is a convenient excuse. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And only through the tender ministrations of Doc Binder and his absolutely sensational wife did I even get off the blocks at all on that first round. But I drank loads of vitamin water, endorsed hereby, and can't speak highly enough of that stuff. Yeah. No, seriously, Chapel Hill is a wonderful town. The people are fantastic. I had a great time. I really sympathize with their love of Greek food and 1990s music, because that's all there is in Chapel Hill.
That actually probably was the two highlights right there.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, holy crap.
90s music.
That was good.
For sure.
That was very good. So I guess we could just go, like, do we want to dive right in?
Yeah.
I feel like we need to pick up the conversation you had earlier about your round. I feel like, you know, our listeners are in suspense.
Yeah, take us through. Dan came in second in this tournament, and second by a lot, because he was actually one of two soloists at the entire tournament. I think we alluded earlier to the fact that there was a slightly disappointingly few solos for WDC, but Dan got one of them and some other good results too. And we can actually also get into sort of like, because I remember you and I talking a little bit at the tournament, Dan, about sort of your strategy approaching the scoring system and the fact that you actually needed to, like, if you wanted to win it, you had to make some like strange decisions throughout the tournament to keep it all under control. So you can, if you want to take us through, like, you know, your rounds in as little or as much detail as you feel like, and or sort of like what you were thinking about trying to win the tournament as you were going through.
Sure, no problem. Well, look, tournaments were always the same for me. I always get in there. I always think, okay, I'm going to come out of the blocks fast. I'm going to smash this. I got to hit it really hard. And it was really obvious in this tournament that that's what you needed to do, because with the way that the scoring averaged your two best rounds or your three best rounds, and with a solo being way, like vastly more than any other score, it was pretty evident that what you want to do is get two great scores on the board or two out of three and then be done with it and not play round four. That was the optimum strategy. And so it proved. Yep. So I thought, fantastic, I'll hit it really hard. And then I got drank too much and had heat stroke. And just like every single round one I had, I just sort of, you know, kind of flopped onto the table. And I was drawn next to Rene. And Rene's a Dutch player. He's absolutely fantastic. He's great. Mm-hmm. And I think I've played him maybe eight times. And only one time have I ever not been stuffed to death by him. So that's great. I've flown all this way. I've come to this wonderful new town. I've just met Miss North Carolina. I'm on a high. I'm kind of out of it because of all the vitamin water. And then, hi, Dan, it's Rene. And he's Russia and you're Turkey. So if you want to get out of this box, you have to go through Austria, who's Jay Heumann, or Italy, who's Eric Grinnell, neither of whom I had met before, which is unusual, because I do know a lot of people in the American hobby come from having come over there. And I love you guys. And I think, you know, it's a great hobby and I enjoy coming. And, also, we don't have that big a hobby in Britain, so if I want to play with, you know, I have to go
abroad. More than three players?
We used to have an absolutely colossal hobby in Britain. It was fantastic. Like, more than 100 players. Like, the first World WDC was at Manicon, and they had 20 boards. And, like, for years and years, it was like that. And the first Manicon I won, I think, was 99, and there were 14 boards on a Friday, and it was, you know, tremendous. And then our hobby just completely fell off a cliff because I think the hatred probably, I would say, would be the main reason. Yeah, the kind of the vast, the body of hatred that, had built up over all that time, it just reached critical mass, and we're trying to resurrect it, and we will do more on that later, I suppose. But yeah, so so there I am, and two Americans I don't know, and I don't know how great, you know, good they are, and so on and so forth. And the round structure, I wasn't really into it. It's like the turn structure, it's like 15 minutes, that's talking, and then as much time as you like to write your orders after that, and the night's getting later, and Brian Acton's on the board, and he's got the TV on, and, you know, it's some really ghastly show that you don't have in England where people are being really horrible to one another and they're out of their minds and they're whacked out, and Acton's laughing, and I think that TV show's more interesting than the game, and then it's all just going downhill, and there's a mess in the West, and I think, oh, this is fantastic. If I could play until 1920, this would be sensational. But the reality is, if I played until 1920, it would have been Sunday because of the way that the speed of the game was going, and I was tired and I couldn't handle it. And then there was a critical moment in the game, actually, and this is, you know, this is going to be a case in point. It's one of my points of diplomacy strategy, which, you know, I didn't adhere to. So
one of your 12-point diplomacy strategy that you're going to recite item by item.
If there's a reason why I didn't win that tournament, it's because of round one, actually, and because of the thing that I didn't do. I was working in a RAT with Rene in Russia because he had the whip on me, and that's fine. I mean, I had a fleet in the Black Sea, and I still felt like he had the whip on me. He's got the bock on me, it's fine. And then Jay Heumann's Austrian, we're working together and it's great. And then Eric Grinnell, who's getting crushed, as Italy. I mean, I am in the Ionian Sea in spring 1903. Crushed. And he just turns around to me and says, so here's the thing. I'm either out this turn, or you can do this colossal stab, which I have just designed for you, and you can just do it, and it'll put me on four, Italy will be on four, Jay Heumann as Austria will be on three, and I'd be on six building. And Austria would just be blown apart, and Eric said, oh, I'll work with you for as long as it takes, and you can take on Jay, and then you can take on Rene, and then we'll just have some fun, and we'll go crazy. And I didn't take it. Because I was in that kind of comfortable, I'm in a three-way alliance with Rene and with Jay, and we can just keep trucking, and we can get the guaranteed three-way here, and the West is in a mess, and we can just press on, and then I'll see how it shakes out down the line. Right. Because I was always confident that I could stab Jay, or that Rene and I could work together to take Jay out of it, like way, way down the line. And then we could get a two way draw, which would be like a fantastic result and a really good start. Sure. And then so I read the orders, and when I read them out and I didn't take Eric's offer, I just crushed him some more, like put him out. I said, as I was reading the orders, I said, I know I'm doing the wrong thing, but this. And just quickly as that, the chance was gone and the three way draw was locked on. There was no way that I could have realistically stabbed Austria without Russia just going, nom, 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 I'll have everything, because Jay's annoyed, because that's how it works, right? That's how the functioning three-way works. The threat to throw, and it's real. And then I think it was only 1905 when we just called it, because we couldn't be bothered to be there another 5 hours just so that we could decide who gets Liverpool out of RAT. And it would be the difference between a 7-center three-way, which wouldn't have been any good for winning the tournament, or a 10 or 11-center three-way, which also wouldn't have been any good for winning the tournament. And it's like, it was that one moment came once where Eric said to me, do this thing, and then I will work with you, and we will go to town, and we'll have fun. And that moment comes along, and there's a moment in time. Diplomacy feels like a continuum when you're playing it, you know? It feels like there's a beginning and a middle and an end, and there's a narrative and there's a structure and something that's there in spring. Oh, no, let's just wait this turn and do it in autumn. It's not that kind of game at all. That is not the kind of game that diplomacy is. Diplomacy is like poker. Diplomacy, which is why you get a lot of poker players who are very good at diplomacy, who are going along, and it's tedium. It's tedious, sheer tedium. Yeah, okay, I'm bouncing in Galicia, I'm not bouncing in Galicia, I move these order, do this, do that, do this. Oh, okay, I got a two-way, I got a three. Terror! Terror! There it is. You've got the aces. They're in your hands. There it is. They came from nowhere. They got them in. And this guy over here is betting. And why is he betting? And then down comes the flop, and it's three diamonds. And what do? Because you've got the ace of diamonds, but is that enough? Is that going to help you? Are you going to get a boat? You're not going to get a boat? He's betting. What do you do? What do you do? Now you're all in. Terror. You've got no idea. And in poker, I'm not a very good poker player, but in poker, I understand it, as by the way, I understand it, is that if you can mentally get to the place where you know what the right thing is to do, pierce your emotions and not go with the easy thing, that's what differentiates you from a good to a great poker player, to be able to know intellectually what to do and to overcome that kind of moment of, ugh. And for me, the most comfortable thing was to work with Jay and Renee. And that's what I did. And it was wrong. It was just stone cold wrong. And that moment came once and it was gone. And we played for all that time. And I had maybe the way that, longer actually in that tournament than I would have had. Maybe had maybe 5 minutes to make the decision because the, you know, the lengths were so long and I made the wrong one. And, you know, before I knew it, that was it. I was batting from behind for the tournament. So Eric Grinnell, sorry, Jay Heumann, well played. Renee, yeah, we worked out.
we won't go there.
He's a good player. He's a great player, and we worked out. It was good to play.
Still, though, so the game ended in a Russia-Austria-Turkey three-way draw.
Yeah, conceded, and I had Stedwood Sensors, which was obviously complete cat crap and not worth anything.
Which is, it's interesting at least, and there's a little to be said for...
So there you go. So you have your heat stroke, and you do a bit of drinking and, you know, whatever, and you try and get back on the horse. And then round two... I got a David Hood special. Thomas Haver was France. I was Germany. I had a guy who was England, who I didn't know, some old timer, who apparently was very good. Another of his ilk in Russia and some guys down there in Austria. I think one of those guys was, what was his name? Oh, it's a guy that wears a hat. He's around the hobby. Big hat. Where's a big
Mowetsky?
Yeah, that's the one, Mowetsky, yeah. He was on board. Yeah, him, that guy. He was playing, yeah. And, you know, frankly, the game, you know, panned out as you would expect. There was a beauty contest for which one of Thomas Haver and I could woo the Englishman. So I thought it would be great to get Andrew Goff, who was Italy. I did say it was one of those kinds of boards. Andrew Goff, I thought, you know, he offered me Munich. He offered to come into Munich, and then he could kind of go for Haver two ways. In the fall and in 02, but it just never panned out. England just didn't fancy it. Haver got him around his little finger and he stayed there. And I told them point blank, you know, this is not the kind of board where you think, hey, EF, we'll roll it because everyone's just going to freeze on you. And that's what happened. So they ground me out and then they called it five way, I think, which is, and there was a lot of that kind of board. And I, you know, that is good diplomacy in a way, but it's also not, and
it's not good tournament playing anyway.
And it's boring. And this might be a good point to deviate for a moment before we talk about the board that Mead and I shared. This might be good to talk about the Grantland article, which I did read. And I know it's going round and round. And I read it and I thought it was an interesting read. And naturally, being an egotist, I reflected on how different it might have been if he had deigned to speak with me.
Or put me on that first board that the poor guy played, or something.
Yeah. But you know, whatever. It's okay. And does it reflect diplomacy a little? But I thought there was a Metafilter comment that I really liked, and you know, because there's a big long train of chat about it on Metafilter, to which David actually drew my attention to. And he said, "There's some guy who just writes something along the lines of, oh, who is this guy? He's got some brass neck, right? He wanders into the national championships, plays like crap, and then judges everybody afterwards. And what?" And what are we supposed to take away from that? And I, you know, and I actually think, you know, to an extent, I think that's probably true. And we're all grateful to have a degree of national interest or international interest or whatever it is in our hobby.
Or any interest, frankly.
But at the end of the day, what you're going to get is just the distilled version of what you would get on any generalist website about diplomacy. Sure. It's a friend loser. It's a game breaker. It's a strange animal. It's peculiar. Well, the thing that I found most interesting about the article in general, a couple of things. There was a meta quality about the interview, which as I was reading through it, I got the feeling that this author, the nature of what he was saying, said more about DIP than the actual content. Because you go through and you go, okay, so there are like 100 people at Dixie or whatever. He could have spoken to all of them, and he might have done. But the people who get quoted and the people who feature Eddie Bassan, Chris Martin, Thomas Haver, Dave Mowetsky, right?
And Siobhan.
And a little bit of Toby Harris.
Yeah.
All right? So let's just smoosh together the people who, if you could say, let's blend together the people, Siobhan excluded, the people who you would say are the evilest, most successful noob whisperers, or at least one or other in the hobby. And suddenly I have this picture of this guy who's in this web. He's in Eddie's web. He's in Chris Martin's web, Thomas Haver's web, Dave Mowetsky's orbit. You know, he's got Toby Harris has got him, you know, dancing like Toby always does. They all do. Siobhan, charismatic, sane. And it's the fact that he, that their narrative is the one that's being passed. Is like, my God, this guy got diplomed. The article is about how a guy went to a diplomacy tournament and got wildly diplomed by some of the best and most successful people in the world at doing that, and then came out of it with a kind of, and then my conclusions are, and how many people come to diplomacy tournaments and they go, oh yeah, diplomacy, I'm going to do this, and Chris Martin said this, so that's right, and then Eddie said that, that's right, and then Maletsky said that, and okay, yeah, that made sense as well, and then they end up on the street and they've had one center all weekend, and they go, what was that? I have a faint distaste for what happened there because, you know, that was the tenor of the article. And
well, so let me turn around a little bit then. And here's my question about what you're saying. I see your point. On the other hand, do you think that just in a vacuum, if you had, I don't know, 1,000 people picked up that article and read it, do you think sort of the right ones would wind up at a diplomacy that like would be more likely to give it a try than they were before they read that article, and the wrong ones might not try it anyway? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think it would have put anybody off who might have fancied it. And yeah, it might have attracted a few people. Yeah. Yeah. It's net positive. I feel like for the hobby. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, I feel there's no such thing as bad publicity. The strength of it was that it sort of communicated to certain people who, you know, who might like games or might not like games, but anyway, haven't found their game. It sort of communicated like the set of personality traits that maybe they'd go, oh, yeah, this might be the one for me, you know?
Yeah, I think it did all those things, but I like Mr. Lester's approach to it. I like, because I did feel like it, you know, and maybe this is all right because it is a game of diplomacy, because at the end of the game of the diplomacy, whether you did well or you didn't do well, it's like finishing a crossword. You're sort of like, okay, done with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm finished. And but it's nice that I hadn't thought of it in that particular way.
He got hustled a little, maybe.
Yeah, maybe I'd have gotten hustled a little bit. Because if you'd gotten, there's certainly a brand of player that is just not represented at all. I mean, you know, you're people that come, they really enjoy playing the game. They always come in somewhere between 7th and 20th. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they're solid players, and they have a really genial attitude about it all. Mm-hmm. And that didn't come in at all. People that just, hey, I just like,
absolutely.
I just like playing
games. How different would that article have been if they'd spoken to Nate Cockrell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For instance. Right?
Right.
Exactly what you're saying. Any
particular direction you might have taken said reporter in, had said reporter interviewed you?
Well, I think he spoke to Toby, so he kind of pretty much had what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that no one ever says, and it's weird, I find this really peculiar that no one ever says this about diplomacy. No one ever says, it's the game, it's a multiplayer game. It's a genuinely multiplayer game that's played and has a national championships and has a tournament victor. And when you think about, are there any other tournament games with a world champion and a national championships and all of that, genuinely competitive games that are actually multiplayer? Can you think of many?
Poker came to mind.
But poker, how interactive is poker? It's competitive, but is it interactive? Like, the only way I can affect the other people is just, you know, through the medium of the betting.
Yeah. As a person who's played a little poker in my life, it can get there. It's not always there. Not every hand ends up head-to-head, and sometimes the presence of a third or fourth or fifth person in a hand can change the whole way that the hand plays out. Right. But it may be the exception rather than the rule,
no,
I suppose.
But Scrabble, right? Risk?
Yeah.
Okay, risk. Yep. Okay, risk, definitely. Yeah, but this is a game with no luck we're talking about here. This is a game where you can actually get all up in someone's face. It's head-to-head. It's genuinely head-to-head. It's elimination. It's like a sport, tennis. Like, you know, it's not – poker might be golf, right? This might be tennis, you know, where it's interactive. What I do directly affects your ability to have game in diplomacy.
Yeah, somewhat zero sum.
So people don't address that in a way that I think is interesting. The diplomacy isn't a series of one versus one interactions. like most sports, like most endeavors are, right? Or team versus team. It's genuinely, you put seven people, you just say, there you go, throw it down. You
figure it out, boys.
Something's going to come out of this, and it could be some of you win, and it could be one of you win, and everybody could come out unhappy, or all of you could come out contented, or a couple of guys, you could just smash them to death because you just collectively decide that you hate them, or and it's like freeform. It's
It is.
Oh, my God. And, like, what is this? And what attracts me to the hobby is that essence of the unknown. Every time you sit down, how are these seven people going to interact? What is going to shake out here? What is going to happen? How is this going to evolve?
I find that not new, but sort of like once they get to sort of that mid-level, people who have played enough to like be thinking about the game and learning the game, a lot of people come to this part where they really start to question, why does every game unfold so differently? And they get on an intellectual level that it's the personalities somehow that make it unfold differently. But why in any particular case do two people decide to do a sea lion in spring before the spring of 1901? Mm. And how does that cause the ripple effect that causes everything else on the board to happen? Or are there so many random seeds that, you know, because I feel like people, at a certain point, they haven't yet figured out that sort of butterfly flapping its wings effect that leads to the way every board unfolds, and they're puzzled by it. And it's the thing; it's one of those things that kind of takes you from intermediate to advanced when you can just sort of start sensing, like, I think I know what's going to happen on this board just because of what people have said before the first move has ever been made.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And then getting to that point where you start, I think for so long, and this is kind of touches on what Dan was saying, you approach a game really thinking about, okay, I'm going to do this, and this is what I'm going to do, and thinking that you have complete control over what it is that you're going to, and like, I can just do this, and I'm going to have a beginning, and I have an end, and I'm going to march through it. When you can't at all do that. There's a significant portion of what you can do that is forestalled, limited, closed, opened, whatever, based on the six other players. Mm-hmm. And thinking about letting go a little bit of that, like, individual, manifest destiny of how you're going to do it, and understanding that you need to react and play to and evolve what you're going to do based on the craziness of the six other people. Well,
particularly if everybody on the board is good at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it gets,
and then we do nothing.
Yeah, right.
We do a whole lot of nothing.
And go on.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to segue, Dan, into, unless you have something else to say, to segue into talking about that game, which is a game in which there were a lot of great people on the board and something happened.
That was a murder board.
If you want to round out the discussion, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't have a solo without something goes wrong for the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And that stands to reason. Especially, you know, and sometimes if it's just you and six players who don't know how to play, then what's got it wrong is that they don't know how to play. But on a board like this, if you're going to solo, something needs to go wrong for the other players, and you need to try and engineer that if you can, or just hope to get lucky. And Russia is a great country to solo with, and I have attitudes to all the countries on the board, and my attitude to Russia is that it's two countries. It's not one, it's two. And people, if you look like a country that has four, you're going to die.
Right.
And people will talk about concentrating your force as Russia, and they're going to talk about, like, you know, leveraging your advantages through the center because you can, you know, have your forces interact and you have so much potentiality. I don't believe in any of that. I think you need to be two powers who have two centers to begin with. And I think you need to ensure that you're the seventh and that there are two other groups of three. So there's EFG over there and there's IAT over here. If Italy goes west, is generally speaking really bad news for Russia, in my experience, because Austria and Turkey are like, interesting. Italy's
not doing anything important.
Yeah, so no matter what you do as Russia, you work with Austria or whatever you do. If you work with Austria, then the West go, who's this guy? You know, and so on and so forth. But if you're these two twos that's just participating, then you can be in a very interesting situation on both edges of the board where you can either help the guy who's going down or be the person who gets thrown to, or be part of, you know, two other guys who want to do work quickly, and they sort of need you to come in. Like if EF want to destroy G real fast, and they'll say, hey, Russia, you come in and maybe get one. Hey, what the hell, get two. Because after that, we can get on with killing each other, which is generally what happens. And in both of those scenarios, those three become two, and those two want to become one. And if it's Russia, you can be in on those equations.
Sure.
Then that's the way to solo, because you get nine over there and nine over there. And you go, oh, I got 18. And everyone goes, what? And that's what happened on our board, in a sense.
Kind of did, yeah. And just for those of you listening who don't know how good a player Dan Lester is, this game, I was France. In this game, David Hood was Germany in this game. Peter Jürgen was England in this game. David Hood and I, for whatever reason, decided, in fact, to do a Sea Lion and didn't tell Dan about it. And Dan, as I recall, opened Moscow to St. Petersburg anyway. Is that correct, Dan?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Because all of what he just explained about getting involved in two theaters and being two center powers, he just did it. We didn't ask him to. Turned out to be amazing because I opened right to the channel and Dan opened right on up there. And yeah, then things happened. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, as far as openings are concerned, you know, as Russia, like I say, you just, if you can do that two twos, it's just better. If you can. Sometimes you can't. But, yeah.
So who made the mistake on this board?
I think the issue was that David Hood was also the tournament director. And there's two ways to go when you have someone who's playing two boards or is potentially distracted or is the tournament director or, as my venerable predecessor, Christian Prudhomme, points out, is an unraveling sweater. I think I think you need to be in that sort of situation where you have two choices. You either gank them, you just smack gank them because they're distracted, or you try and monopolize them. And that's what I did on our board. I thought, if I'm the guy who's talking to David Hood most of the time, then that's going to be really positive for me. Because when he gets down, he's a superb player. He's going to write his orders. He's going to write great orders. And, you know, if I can just get in his, you know, to just to be, he's going to be working with Eric Mead in France because that's what they decided to do from the get-go. And if I can just make sure that, you know, David, he's talking to me a lot every single turn, talking to me, that we have a really solid relationship, he's going to think, you know what? I'm going to have a solid relationship with Eric. I've got a solid relationship with Dan. I keep an eye on both of them, kill Jürgen, and then see. And the fact is, I soloed in, what, I was six?
Something like that.
Yeah. So it
seemed like 1927, but it was probably about 06.
It was either 06 or 07. And as far as he was concerned, his game was keep an eye on Dan, keep an eye on Eric, kill Jürgen.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, by merit of the fact that I did this two theaters thing and I actually went 10, 14, 18, I can't blame him for missing it because everybody on that board missed it apart from you, Eric, because you knew the risks involved and you were trying to play a game of brinkmanship with Hood. And, you know, ultimately when you do that, it can, you were aware that it could tip over into a solo if I got everything else right. And I did so.
Yeah, well, and right, to back it up a little bit, from my perspective, I actually did choose the let's work with the distracted tournament director who's playing on two boards, even though he's David Hood and an excellent player and everything, because I kind of got the feeling he just said Sea Lion because he knew how to do that, and he could just go to me, okay, what orders are we writing this year? And I would just say, okay, we're killing England, it's fine, just do this, you know, keep an eye on Dan, keep an eye on Dan. Part of what made it interesting / difficult was that Peter Jürgen, not the kind of person to just be like to go quietly, immediately decided to make it easy on Dan as possible at the expense of me and David, which was probably the right thing to do, and going so far at one point as to convoying a Russian army onto his own island.
Well, I hate to be the guy who's going to sit here and defend Peter Jürgen because my reputation will never
recover. It was
recover.
The right thing to do.
No, I mean in now speaking. But his thought was get the Russian in, scare everyone, survive. Mm-hmm. And he turned on me in 03, 04, and he finished the game on two centers. Yeah. So his strategy actually worked because he did use me. The trouble is that strategically it suited me. Like, I ended up with only one English center in a solo. So
that's true. That's true, yeah. Well, yeah, he turned it. I don't know. I think I give myself credit for that. I just talked him into a bad plan. At some point, that's like my one skill at diplomacy, is talking people into things.
No German centers in that set as well. One English and no German.
Right, because you didn't need them. There was about four of them that you could have immediately walked into.
Right.
But so what turned in the game, as I recall, was that you would have just these long conversations with David, season after season after season, and David was basically just focused on take out England, then figure it all out. And then at some point... he stabbed me, and when you and I talked about it after the game, you said, no, I don't think I did that much to actually convince him to do that. Do you wish to maintain that?
Yeah, like I say, in the North, it was just about taking a lot of David's time, and we did have a lot of cagey conversations about, are you cool? Are you cool? Are you really cool? Yeah. Really? 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 And, you know, the South is actually where all the hard work needed to be done in a funny way with me, because I must have changed sides 9 times down there. Yeah. But it's what you have to do. I was with Mikey, I was against him, I was with him, I was against him, I was with him, I was against him. I was with Mike, I was with Steven, I was against them, I was with them, I was against them, you know. So, yeah. And that's one of the things you have to do as well, I think. And, you know, switch sides and for it to be okay. That's the hardest thing to do in diplomacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which brings me back briefly to the Grantland guy.
Okay.
And his idea, the line in the article that killed me the most, actually, was, and it's buried away in there. It's like, I sort of went there and I just sort of did what I thought would be natural, a good thing for me to do. So I just chose an ally and stuck with them for the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his approach to the game, and that was it. And then these mm-hmm. maelstroms kick off around him, and Bartoloni, you know, is perfectly normal, but because he's such a giant guy and it's terrifying that he kind mm-hmm. of goes, oh God, he's shouting. He probably wasn't shouting. He's probably just talking in his normal voice. But anyway, you know, and then everyone else, and everyone keeps coming to him and saying, don't do this, change sides, switch, do something different.
Mm-hmm.
What made this guy think the word diplomacy is on the box? Okay. It's on the box. It's right there. Diplomacy. What made him
in that
think,
fancy font?
Yeah. What made him think that an appropriate way to approach a game of diplomacy was to choose an ally and stick with them the whole game? And he doesn't get any opprobrium for this, and probably shouldn't, because to my complete inability to understand, this is a tactic pursued by any number of people that come and play diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
They arrive, they choose their ally, and they go. And that's it.
Of all people, Chris Martin was on this show a while ago, and that literally was his advice to a new player.
Right.
Hit your wagon to a star, I think, was his specific quote about it.
Yeah, as long as you see CM in the number plate somewhere, mate.
Right.
But, exactly. No, but seriously, it's not... I don't think you can start there and go anywhere else. I don't think there is anywhere to go from there. But you have to understand, I'm coming from a completely different perspective. The British hobby is never was like this, and maybe that's why it collapsed and it's been, you know, annihilated. The English hobby, when I joined it as an 18-year-old and, you know, even now, it's just scorpions. That's all mm-hmm. it is. It's just that, you know, when there were 200 people there or whatever, there would be 200 scorpions in a pit. And like
delivered by mail
sometimes,
to your house.
Sometimes there would be a frog in there, and my God, the stinging. The stinging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a guy who walked in there and like, hi, I want to be someone's ally. That would be like 6 scorpions would be around him going, hi, hi. But he wouldn't even get far enough to like, you know, they'd be pincered up and stung 1,000 times and that would be the end of it. And, you know, that's just the English game, which it actually has a kind of dot mentality about it. And if everybody is dotting one another all the time, then actually that becomes an orthodoxy.
You just get used to it.
Or if you know, want to play what I would call the Dutch game, a very typical Dutch like a Lowlands type game, Dutch-Belgian game, is a balance of power game. Like if you're on 6, watch out. If you're on 7, man, they're coming. They are coming. The whole board is coming. Like if you're Russia and you're on 7, you know, France is going to let Germany a dot just so that he can hit you.
Yeah.
Even though they were fighting like 10 seconds ago. He's like, whoa, 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 stop. Whoa, 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 whoa. He's on 7. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I completely didn't notice that, you know. And in America, you can get to 17 before anybody does that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, before everyone goes, please don't kill me anymore because he's on 17. And sometimes that doesn't even work. Like, you can go down, you know, bleating. But we all lost. It doesn't matter. I'm working with my guy. Which, it's not diplomacy, is it? Is it?
I think...
I totally get where you're coming from. I think there's two things that lead people to this. One is this basic idea: you don't know anybody, and you know, in any social situation, if you walk into a group of people and you barely and you don't have a reason to be there other than that you're vaguely part of a group, and for some reason you're there and you know no one.
Right.
You meet one person, and you work really hard. You go through the awkward part where you learn the name and whatever. That person's now become your ally, and that person and you are now okay. At least I know somebody here, and you're less likely to meet the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth. You know, you kind of stick with that person and then branch out slowly. It's sort of like a social, you know, it's something you do in a group of strangers.
Yes, I understand that that's a comfortable thing to do emotionally. But
right. Second, I think for Americans who have the most tenuous grasp of history ever, and the only thing that we really know for sure about is World War II, there's no flipping sides in that war. And we're looking at a map of Europe that we've seen 1,000 times, and they're painted those two colors.
A dozen if you're American. But
right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. There's one side that's blue, and there's one side in the middle that's red, and like those are the sides, and then one side that never flipped won.
And even the third thing that I'll add onto that is...
I'm not saying it's smart. I'm just saying, you know, you've seen it.
Not that David Hill, the reporter, necessarily even knew this, but it's actually not a terrible way to approach a tournament with that kind of a scoring system.
Oh, with that scoring system, sure.
Yeah. Even if you were thinking about it in advance, read the scoring system, and were going to your first tournament ever, or playing in your first few games ever, and you just wanted to come in the top 20 or 30 or something,
you know what,
like that.
You know,
you might just pick an ally and hope that they're nice to you.
You know what? It's fine. I this is not a condemnation of alliance play at all. I think alliance play, you know, it's essential. And to be kind of a master at it is essential. And to be willing to do it, and even if it's not in your best interest, is essential. But when it fails, when you have stalled and you're looking at a nailed-on 5 or 6-way draw, you have been found out and everyone has just gone, nope, something else, please. Mm-hmm. You need to be able, the game is to recognize that and change.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Oh, totally with that. And I like what you were saying earlier. You know, why would you think that? I guess what I was taking away from that is, why would you think, having never played the game before, if every other person on the board comes to you and says, flip, why would you think that it's not at least a legitimate option that people do? Like, you must assume that, you know, you have to assume that, like, you know, this is how this game is normally played. If everyone's saying, oh, you should flip, oh, you should flip, yes, maybe it's in the best interest, but probably it's a normal thing to be saying.
Yeah.
And part of the game, and presumably people decide to do it sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, that was sort of what I was taking away from what you were saying, and what made me think of. It's like, well, yes, it's not... It can't be that everyone else here is wrong, and you, who's never played before, have the right strategy.
Well, it can be. It can just be like, me and Dan are working together, we're rolling the board, and so everybody's trying to get us to flip because we're doing so well. But better players learn the difference between the times they're trying to get you to flip.
Right, sure.
Because they want you to for only their own self-interest and the times that, anyway.
So
sort of a minor point. But
so just to recap what Dan had said about his game, he had no German centers. He had one English center.
Right.
All other 9 centers he had, other than Scandinavia, were in the East, and you in the West, between you and David Hood, somehow didn't notice this was happening.
I noticed, but I was fighting for my life.
I understand that it went 11, 14, 18, and that can be dramatic. However,
Hood stabbed me. He just turned the whole other direction. I get that it wasn't his dots, but it was a lot of dots he could have been interested in that he instead was interested in mine. He must have thought somehow there was a 2-way in there for him, right?
We proposed a 2-way draw, and I voted for it.
Right, I voted against that, as I recall.
Yeah.
You voted for it because you knew it wasn't going to pass.
No, I voted for it because I thought it would be fine. Who knows? Like, that, I was on 10.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. I don't.
There was a lot of hard roads.
So,
yeah, I mean, you know,
It was a strange game. And for what, one thing I will say is that it seemed like you didn't truly have an ally for that entire game.
Mm.
You're right. You did flip back and forth a lot in the South. We were sort of playing leave Dan alone in the West for a while, but it, I mean, at the same time, you're actively working with England, who we're trying to kill, and yet somehow we're still not really exactly fighting you.
Well, I actively work with Hood most of the time, and it just happened that most of the time that was in line with what Jürgen wanted as well. So
that's true.
Anyway, that's true. Can we talk about something else?
Because, yes, of course. So Dan soloed the game quite early on.
He beat Eric.
Eric
lost.
I lost to Dan. That is what happened.
That's what happened.
It hurt a little. I was actually, I think I was pretty, like, I was pretty much indifferent to the result by that point, and almost rooting for it after a certain point. Like, I didn't, because I'd gotten very frustrated with David Hood and David Hood not seeing the board the way that it looked. And
so then the outcome was right, is what you're saying.
The outcome was fine.
Great. With me. No, right. Predetermined and something that you created. In fact, probably orchestrated.
I wish it were otherwise, but it was my my favorite of a list of options that was really unpleasant.
Sure. So, Dan, tell us about how you met the Miss North Carolina.
Yeah, all right.
tell us about that, because I have a picture of you and Miss North Carolina from behind. It's you and Toby.
That can be taken out of context.
I know. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were all fully clothed in a room of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her husband was watching.
Yeah.
Let me just say, first of all, it's Mrs. North Carolina.
Yeah.
It is Mrs. North Carolina. Okay.
I couldn't figure out if that was a separate, like, competition. Miss North Carolina.
Mrs. North Carolina was an absolutely fantastic person, and exactly what you expect to find in the south of the United States of America when you come in as a foreigner, you know, like, well, hello there, y'all, I'm a Southern Belle, and, you know, possibly, you know, a little bit, you know, I'm not a teenager, but at the same time, I am so charming and so full of grace that, you know, I'm just, you know, obviously a wildly attractive beauty queen, and that's fantastic. And you know what? She was amazing. Her accent, I mean, however, you know, wonderful a British accent might be, supposedly, then, you know, a Southern Belle is just, like, top of the heap, as far as I'm concerned. Like, and most people would agree with that, I think. You know, she was wonderful. She was graceful. It was obvious that she'd walked into, like, something completely blind when she came along to this diplomacy tournament, and it's like, oh my god, it's a basement full of dudes, many of them considerably older than I was expecting, given that they're playing a board game. And you know, David Hood is someone who could, you know, could persuade you to do anything or go anywhere for any reason. And, you know, that's, you know, so when he persuaded her to come here and do this, I had visions of her going, oh no, I've been diplomed by David Hood into a really awful situation. And there was a little shyness in the room. I detected a lot of shyness towards Mrs. North Carolina, which was, you know, she was such an open person. I was very pleased. Christina North Carolina is presumably her name, Mrs. Christina North Carolina. And we posted some photos and we chatted, and it was great. And she was lovely. And I'm thinking of having Miss United Kingdom. Seriously, that's a different Miss World, and the way that we do this, it's not like a nicely spoken, like a graceful individual. It's not what we look for in beauty queens, generally speaking, in the rest of the world, I find. So she was great. And I felt for her because, you know,
she was seriously awkward.
She was an attraction, and she wasn't treated as such. So.
No. Oh, well, yeah, I was fascinated by just how the whole room reacted, and like just watching the swirling humanity of it all. I was sort of like watching, I don't know, any of those comedies where they thrive on awkward social interactions. Yeah. It was just like, just to watch it from afar was cringeworthy and interesting.
I felt like nobody wanted to be like the fanboy. At first.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Oh, no, but yeah, then, that's why we're talking to you.
But then when you guys did it, then that made it sort of fine, because, like, well, of course, I mean, it's not like they're just there because they're so, like, starstruck by Miss North Carolina. They're having a legitimate cultural exchange here, and so it's no big deal. So.
thanks for breaking down those barriers.
Yeah, exactly.
It was really good.
And then people started to go for the selfies and whatnot. And
Mr. North Carolina became increasingly irritated.
Yeah.
It was good. And that was actually the best part. If I could have made him even more irritated, I would have done. Yeah.
Winning.
So Dan,
you noticed it was the Brits that went straight for it.
Like,
let's make no bones about this. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. No. So
And now that you've won the North American Diplomacy Championships and you've almost won the World Championships twice,
yep.
What's sort of next for you? I mean, are you going to revive the British hobby? You're going to just I know you're thinking about going back to France to play.
I'm never going to France to play again because it's just unmitigated misery. For me personally, I always do really badly in France.
Despite being the only person there that speaks fluent French, I'm sure that.
Yeah. Aside from the French folks.
I think that makes me even more concerning, to be perfectly honest with you. Who is this guy who thinks he can speak fluent French? This awful grating noise, can we just make it stop somehow? Take all his stutters and disappear him completely. That would be a good thing. No, obviously, appearing on Diplomacy Cast is the pinnacle of anyone's potential diplomacy
career. That's sort of where I was heading.
So after this, it's quite difficult to know where to go, except that probably we will host World Diplomacy Championships 2017 in the United Kingdom.
Really?
Yes, really.
Freaking off news.
This is among the unofficial announcements for that, and you can hold me to it.
So, okay, I'm going to try and hold. Are you going to run it?
That's to be decided. We have one of the world's most revered and misunderstood tournament directors in David Norman. I feel like if I just was to kind of walk in and bigfoot him, that would be weird.
I'm just curious.
Yeah,
I didn't know if maybe Mr. Norman had decided he wanted to do something different. I don't know.
I think, but Dave and I, we're still working out who's going to do what, but we're going to do this thing. And the idea is to bring back the glory days of the UK diplomacy hobby at least once, at least like a massive, gigantic Uber reunion where we get all the scorpions back in the pit.
I want to meet the scorpions because, frankly, it sounds fun.
Yeah, it really is fun. It's like being stung so many times. Yeah, it's like in the Hunger Games, you start to hallucinate. You have to find, and then there's like teenagers trying to kill you, and maybe that's
so. Make your travel plans now, listeners. 2017.
No, what are we gonna do?
It's gonna be
this fantastic. Is the scorpion pit. Have fun.
Yeah. I mean, the Austrians had it in a castle all those years ago, so I feel like that's been done. So I don't think we'll do a castle, but we'll figure something out that's quintessentially English, and we'll make it. Yeah, we need to take some leaves out of Wack's book, because Wack understood what it meant to make a genuinely holistic experience that people wanted to travel abroad for. If I'm going to fly halfway around the world, or even frankly like 20 minutes, I'm going to go there for an experience that's more than just playing this game, because ultimately sometimes when you go to tournaments and you play the game, you lose and wow, bad, and you sit there and you think, spent how much and doing what, why, and that kind of despair comes over you where you go, why am I doing this? And then of course you get out of the whole caring about what your result is phase that you only got into because you felt like you ought to, and then you go, oh look, there's people here that I like, and and I'm seeing a new place, and I'm with people that I would never have met. And this is the one thing I would say to anybody about the diplomacy hobby, and it's missing from that article, and it's something that people would not get unless they came. I think this hobby contains some of the most singular and extraordinary people that you could hope to meet in this life. What are the chances that I would have met Nathan Barnes or Eric Mead or any number of the people that I play diplomacy with just in the course of a normal life? You go to
0%.
You go to university or college, whatever you call it. You go to work. You have relatives. You meet people in a club. You have guys who live near you, neighbors. You're thrown together through happenstance. Diplomacy attracts. I mean, make no mistake about it. Mostly freaks and weirdo.
Like, which we are among them.
Myself included, about it. But at the same time, truly extraordinary people who do some truly incredible things, like just for a living, or just, have these attitudes and the blends and the differences. It's not like we're all the same. We're very, very different sets of people. And yet, they're in your life. And they can be in your life as much as you want them to be. And that's great. Because that's something you don't find in other competitive hobbies either. There's not a lot of people who make friendships through Scrabble.
Yeah.
Those Monopoly tournaments where everyone goes away and just feels like they're friends afterwards. Nope.
No.
And to all the people, if there's anybody out there listening, pause. from the postal
at,
hub
at all. Anyone at all.
Anyone who's like plays on the internet or whatever, they you know, they turned up to get some tactical advice, which they sure as hell aren't going to get from me.
Nope.
But they might get it from someone else. The thing that I would say to them is get out there and meet these people who you are playing diplomacy with. Just meet them. It doesn't matter if you're going to be terrible in face-to-face. I've got a friend of mine who I'm not going to name just for good taste. He's fantastic online. He's a really good player. Face-to-face,
yeah.
You know, no, not really. But, you know, we're friends. And if he hadn't come to the tournament, we wouldn't be friends. And, okay, the prospect of being friends with me might not. No. It's not about me. It's really not. But just do it. Just go and do it face-to-face and meet people. And it's going to be great. And it's a welcoming hobby. It's such a destructive game. It's so awful where people are being horrible to one another all the time. It makes the after, the kind of the afterwards just that much more inclusive. And, you know, people are very friendly. And I don't care who you are. There's someone in the hobby for you.
Yeah. And they really don't quit as often as they threaten to.
There's a lot of talk about quitting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of less actual follow through with the quitting. It's a little addictive. It's a little bit, you know, like methamphetamines or alcohol.
Sure.
You know,
I'm going to quit right after this.
You know, we're pushing in about an hour here, so we're gonna wrap it up. We have one last question for you, Dan, and you can go anywhere you want with this. But we often ask our guests, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made on a diplomacy board? And this could be anything. It could be, you know, tactical. It could be social. It could be that time you threw up all over the board, whatever you want.
I wish I had something more charismatic than what I do, but there's one that lives with me always as being just so incomprehensibly piss poor that it was unrecoverable. It was in Vienna. I went there for the World Championships. It was fabulous. It was wonderful. We're in a castle. Like I said, we're playing diplomacy in a castle. And I've gone all that way and I still hadn't had a result really in a proper tournament or, you know, internationally enough. And I was on this board and I was England and this French guy, I think, was Germany and this German guy was France. That's confusing,
right?
Isn't it?
Yes,
so anyway, and the deadlines were 20 minutes, which is massive, like huge, colossal. It felt like an eternity being from the British hobby where the deadlines are like bang, bang, drop dead, keep going, don't stop, just because we always get to 1911 in like a morning and a half in England. And here it's like 20 minutes for every, and it was sorted. The French guy, you know, we had him cooked basically. Russia was playing silly buggers, but it was all right because Germany and I were in this totally solid alliance. We were like locked. And this guy was like definitely going to, you know, stick with me because France was there for the taking and Russia was crazy. And I had all my fleets lined up as England, and I had my fleets lined up to just smash the Mid-Atlantic. I think I had North Atlantic, Irish, and English Channel, and I might have had like Norway locked up and stuff. And it was like 1903, and I was ready to go. And the plan was real simple. Kill France, then kill Germany, get a massive result. Because yep. Germany just wasn't all that great, and I knew that I could do him afterwards, and it would be easy enough. And I had this in my mind, and because the time was going past, and it's only in years afterwards I realized this is how it happened. It's because so much time had passed. At the time, to me, it was incomprehensible why I had done it. I had my fleets there, and in 2 years' time, I would stab Germany. And then I suddenly thought, oh, look, if I can convoy an army to Holland right now, or Belgium, something. There were two things that I could get from him that were just, I could get them right now. I think it was Sweden and Belgium. I could get in there, and I could get in behind him, and he would be toast. Finito, game over Germany. So that's great, because then I'll have killed France and I'll kill Germany. So in a sweat, like just at the end of this 20-minute turn, I crossed all my results out and I wrote it all down, like a massive stab on Germany. And I was looking at the board and looking at my orders, looking at the board, looking at my orders, trying not to look at the others, sweat, writing, and then like the cross, like the heart constricted and everything. And then you put the orders in the box and you go, yes. And then the orders get read out. And they start out, and they're early game orders that are being read out. And there's this dawning realization long before it gets to my orders that I have just written some late to mid to late game orders in the early game. And it's like, whoa. And then I'm looking at my position, I'm like, I haven't even taken the Mid-Atlantic yet. I am so far away from being able to take France, let alone take France and Germany at the same time.
It turns out I only had 4 units.
It's like I just landed from Mars. And when and the orders are read out, and it's a clusterfuck, right? Do you know how bad it is? It's so bad that France doesn't even know that he was being attacked beforehand. He doesn't even know that I'm being attacked. And I'm like, I try and sell it to him afterwards. I'm like, I just switch sides. I'm now going to go against you. And he said, You're unpredictable. You know, but I was going to attack you. No, you weren't going to attack me. You were always going to attack you. I'm like, oh my God, I have screwed this up so badly. Germany did his pieces. He did his pieces. Because he could see from his perspective that we had a sweet thing. And I have just stabbed, just administered the worst, single worst. It's a two-center stab. The single worst two-center stab that could conceivably have been executed at any time in the game. You know how when you do a stab and it's two and you think, I'm going to do it. And then we're going to see. Because he's going to pick two up and I'm going to put two on. And it's going to be like, yeah, this situation is going to look totally different after the build phase, and this is going to value, you know, it couldn't have been, it was worse. After, you know, after I put the units on, I'm like, this is worse than it was when I didn't have the units. Because I just look like I might be about to be a threat. Even though no two pieces of mine are next to one another. He threatened to quit. He was like saying, this always happens to me, these crazy they come and they do this every time it happens to me, and it's like, okay, look, I'll unwind and they'll just disappear from everywhere. Germany lost the plot, and you know, the rest of the tournament I was just like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. I just went into complete despair mode. I'm in this beautiful setting, I'm in this wonderful place, I'm playing the game, and why am I here? There's nothing else to do. I'm 100 miles away from civilization in a castle. I can't even go out to a bar because there isn't one. I just
a castle.
Yeah, that was singularly the worst game of diplomacy and the stupidest thing I ever did on the board.
So to summarize, basically, Dan Lester's worst moment as a diplomacy player is something I do approximately once per tournament, which is why I'm hosting a podcast and Dan's out there winning everything in North America. Just saying.
The worst. Sorry. That's so true. It's awesome.
God, it's so
true. Wow. Well, Dan, I'm glad that your worst mistake is Eric needs bread and butter.
Yeah, you know. It's just Thursday for me.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's good. No, it's good.
Well, and there was the time I bribed that guy, which I really regret.
Yeah, you probably
didn't. I'm kidding. That really happened. That really happened in the British hobby. Somebody bribed someone with money, and everyone went ballistic.
Well, I mean, I learned from that Grantland article that it's okay to cut up people's letters and rearrange the letters in them and send them off to your opponents. I thought that was amazing. So
I paid a guy $1.75 to stab Andy Bartle any one time.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. He did it.
Oh, of course he did.
Yeah.
It was $1.75.
Yeah.
I mean, great. Well, Dana, I know you've got things to do. It must be, you know, O-Dark 30 there and wherever you're at. And I'm really glad you found time.
Thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
Thanks for doing this.
I'm sorry I brought you all to tears. I just wanted to leave the general population with one piece of advice, which is the best piece of advice I could possibly give about diplomacy. It is a piece of tactical advice, and it's the only one that I have, really. And it's a real one. It's not even a joke. Never stab in the build phase. That's it.
Never stab in the build phase. That's it.
We have our topic for the next episode, at least.
That's excellent. Yeah, we can talk about that for an hour.
Parse that for a while, yeah. Thank you very much for doing this, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
Really
enjoy it.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you later.
Pleasure to be on.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead. Signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.